about to scare you, but I want to talk about that word in the Greek for a moment. I have a message for myself today. That's why I wanted that song twice. If you don't want to listen in, when I go back to the board and my back's turned, you can leave. I have already been on this subject this year. And I fought it for a few hours last night when I tried to do something else. And I fought it a few minutes backstage. And then I decided I'm going to do it. Foundation first. Last Sunday we talked about faith. Most people think faith is just belief. Now hang on to me as I do this heavy stuff and then I'll get to the message. Pisteo is the word in the Greek. It's a verb. It is not just belief. It is, come on folks, you already know, it's action based upon belief. You got it. Sustained by confidence. What I've called the ABC of faith. The English language wrecked the concept when they put belief in, where forms of pisteo, the verb in the Greek, or pistis, the noun in the Greek. And they ruined it. We should have coined a verb. We should have coined to faith. Because too much of Christianity parks something over here in the cranium and does nothing about it. And you know how I feel? You stop any 10 people on the street and ask them what a Christian is. They're going to tell you a Christian does this and does that, doesn't do this and doesn't do this and doesn't do this. Always four or five times the dozens over the dues. Has nothing to do with being a Christian. Dare I do it again? What do you want from your lover? What do you want from your children? What do you want from your husband? What do you want from your wife? Perfection or trust? And that's about as close as you will come to resurrecting the imageness of God in you. And for more than 2,000 years, about every 400 years, God has raised up somebody to remind the church that God's got perfection flying all around Him. He has the capacity to put it in us. What He's after is spiritual reproduction, not spiritual imitation. He's as fed up as you are with those wearing the mask of a hypocrite and hiding behind it and putting everyone down. He can provide everything else, but He gave to us freedom without which there can be no trust, no love, no faith. And He's looking for someone that will trust Him. And trust, in the Old Testament, there are two words. You flee to the shelter of a rock, or to the mother bird's wings, or you lean on a staff. In both the Old and the New Testament, it's an action word. You're not faithing until you're acting. The word was around before the New Testament was written. If I were teaching philosophers on Mars Hill in Athens, I would teach them like a neutral prof that this is the definition of faith. Action based upon some belief that you can sustain with a confidence in that belief sufficient to keep it going. And then I would say you cannot live without faith. Anybody says you're living without faith, you got up this morning and practiced faith when you put your feet on the floor. You didn't think about it, but we have action based upon the belief and the confidence that gravity is going to work. And while we slept, it didn't change, and we will not go to the ceiling. I ran a red light today, first time in 100 countries. If you do not ever see Patty Milligan here again, you know I killed her for reminding me of it. Because she will never let me live it down. I wish I could blame somebody else. And it wasn't even an act of faith. I had a moment of stupidness. I will not tell you all the things that might have distracted me, but I was in a momentary stupidness. There you go with your evil thoughts again. But under normal circumstances, I practice old-time faith, probably more than anything else I do when I expect people to stop at a red light. That fool coming on the right thought I would stop. He had faith in that green light, and he kept his foot to the floor. And I was heading right across in front of him. God didn't even stop me. The point is, you can't exist without faith. But God dipped into the language stream, and as I've said many times, part of the fullness of time in sending forth His Son, a language that was the most precise ever falling from the lips of men, the Greek language. And He just took a word out and made it His, and put a capital letter on it, and separated all kinds of actions into two kinds. Action based upon a belief sustained by confidence that when God says something, He will do it, to quote the old mere heathen in the book of Numbers, God's not a man that He should lie, neither the son of man that He should repent. Hath He said, and shall He not do? Or hath He spoken, and shall He not make it good? The word to Jeremiah, I will hasten my word to perform it. And it's a Hebrew word that is like a magnifying glass that catches the rays of the sun and brings every power to play on one spot. God will take His word once we find it, and He'll back it up. He's more concerned about it than we are. You can trust Him. That's why He wants to find people who will trust Him. And forever, as we have written over the steps back there, forever, O Lord, Thy word is settled in heaven. Faith begins, Hebrews 11 says, with the assumption that God was behind it all. He spoke and nothing began to become everything. And He holds it together and will rearrange it. And the choice of the man of faith, biblical faith, is, are you going to listen to what you are convinced God has said, or are you going to listen to circumstances and let them destroy you? And the opportunity of heroes of faith, they decide, I'm going to believe God. And bleep the circumstances. I wish I could say it the way I want to say it. But you understand? This is all with you. I mean, these pablum Christians sitting around doing nothing, who define goodness as nothing. It's what most of Christianity is. I don't do this. I don't smoke. I don't bleep. It doesn't even take God for me to read your mind. You really analyze it. They don't do anything. Christianity's, I didn't do it. God's looking for men and women who will trust Him, who have a circumstance that defies what He promised. And you say, by God's grace, I'm going to hang on God's promise, trust Him, and stare the circumstance in the face, and wait if necessary till eternity dims time, and I wake up where nothing conflicts with His Word, but I'll be damned if I'll let the circumstance crush me. That's what God's looking for. That's why I worship courage. 10% of faith is about that other stuff you hear about. 90% is courage. And God reached in and said, I'll take this word, and when action is based upon what I've promised, that's what I'm going to call faith with a capital letter. Everything else doesn't mean it's bad. Every other action based upon any other belief, sustained by confidence that it's right, it may be good or bad, but doesn't get God's attention. He may be for it, He may be against it, but doesn't move Him. The only thing God's looking for are those times that He finds someone who will trust Him in spite of every circumstance Because God gave you a promise you can reach up and grab and it'll fit your need. That's what I'm going to do right now. You with me? Introduction's over. That's the heavy stuff. I'm going back to Deuteronomy 33. This book, the Old and the New Testament, simply stated, is God revealing what He wants to do for people who trust Him. Let me say it again. Don't make this a complicated book. I've been with you 20 years now. I finally got that straight. I thought it was 19. That's a compliment on this marriage, I think. I thought it was 19. You convinced me. I've been here 20 years. And I start my 21st year, November. Is that correct? You're impossible. You know my battles of faith, and I have preached many messages laying down the whys, my acceptance of this book. Our scholarship background is laid out in the Bible displays in the back. We know what the manuscripts say. But reduce it all down to the basic common denominator of thus saith the Lord. The Old Testament is the record of God picking out of all the peoples of the earth a particular people that He would make His oracle. Sometimes He spoke directly to them, but sometimes their rebellion would cause Him to enter in and, like the director of a play, make the very dramas of their life act out truths He wanted all of us to know of what He was looking for in the people that He would choose and spend eternity with. So all of these dramas in the Old Testament, Peter says, are written for our example. And Paul to the Corinthians said, all the promises of God in Him that is Christ are yes, and in Him amen, or so be it unto you. So with that background, I just have a fishing license to go anywhere in this book, find a promise, and because God said it, attack my circumstances by pulling this promise down and making it mine. So listen in while I do that today, because I happen to need this. In Deuteronomy 33, I've been there already this year. The Song of Asher. A simple promise encompassing about two verses that I can claim. Now, I'm sure a lot of you look like you don't have a... Well, I'm looking at you. Some of you look like you don't have a problem in the world. I've been amazed of late, as I've had a chance, don't really know why, to pierce through the surface of a few people and come to admire them greatly, because behind the smile and behind the surface, a lot of pain they're living with. And you know, I'm happy that you're happy, that I'm happy. But I'm not. I'm not without a smile, but I'm not without the knowledge as the leader of this church that we're entering into a very serious battle. And I'm not without my concerns, and I told you as you watched me bleed through a personal problem that the bleeding became most intense when it became apparent to me that the trust you make so obvious and the freedom you give me to make decisions for this church and this now worldwide vast network, I put someone in the position to bring hurt. And yeah, I have accepted the forgiveness. God gave me forgave me before you did, and you forgave me before I forgave myself. But I still bleed knowing the problem. And I need this promise today. The first part of which says, thy shoes shall be iron and brass. Now tell me, you've been here before, what are shoes for? Shoes. Iron and brass. Why in the hell did God not say, thy shoes shall be fluffy little house shoes, or furry little soft things? By the way, you don't go to bed with iron and brass shoes. It's not designed for sitting around doing nothing. Anybody ever think of getting up in the morning and sitting down on the couch and say, where's my iron and brass shoes? I gotta hold my feet on the ground while I sit here. The point's obvious. Shoes are for walking. And the promise indicates it's going to be a tough trip. I've been here before. What do we call this? Tough shoes. Tough trip. Where did this idea come from? That because you finally opened the door and let poor trembling God waiting there with his hat in hand, hoping you're going to accept him in, that he'll make it easy for you the rest of your life. I've watched these evangelists for years get up there and froth at the mouth and gyrate around and try to convince you that if you walk down that aisle and say a few words down here, you've got a feather bed to heaven. At least I've been honest with you. I've said, if you're going to be a Christian, you better know this. All hell's going to land on you. Have I told you it's easy? I'm not sure most people are man enough to be a Christian. I can guarantee you, you start walking by faith, breaking that connection and that beat that the rest of the world walks by, all hell's going to break loose. But don't blame the devil for all of it. God's in a training program, and Hebrews 12 says, whom the Lord loveth, he traineth. Paideia is the word in the Greek, it's to child train. A good coach doesn't make you fight 15 rounds before you fight one, run 5 miles before you run a quarter of a mile. And what Hebrews 12 is saying is God trains you. And if you'll look at the life of Jesus, the cross came at the end of his ministry. So where comes this Christian stuff that suggests that because you have suddenly waved at God, everything gets easy? I told you, I've been preaching these messages to you for 20 years. But that was supposed to be for you. I graduated when you elected me. I've made the trip. And I'm up here to tell you, tough shoes means it's going to be tough. I remember an old Australian sailor preacher when I was a kid. I didn't know what he was talking about. He'd look down and slap his old bald head and say to the church, cheer up, saints. It's going to get worse. I never in my wildest imagination thought that this year after we closed the circuit on the globe and after the battles we've been in for the last 20 years, that something would hit that in spite of the smile would make me get up every morning and wonder, were we going to crash down after all these years? Get up every morning and consider just taking it on the land. You know how easy it'd be for me to get in a plane with a one-way ticket. Yeah, I think those thoughts. But I ain't a quitter. And when we get hit every day with something new and the yo-yo goes up and down as we're trying to carry out the mission that all of you sacrificed to make happen, and looking to August 14th, which is more important than my birthday. We come online, if all goes well, though I expect all hell to hit us in Anguilla, we will bring on that giant station that now we've spent 5 years through obstacles bringing to pass. And then what missile's going to hit me related to this battle you all know we're in? And why doesn't God just back up and make it easy for us? I'm telling you again, and I'm telling myself, it's a tough trip. You're going to go against the tide, get up in the morning, and know it's tough. Just accept it. It's tough. Today isn't going to be easy. But what is the other side of the coin? The shoes are tough enough for the trip. Whom the Lord calls, He enables. He knows where you are, who you are, and what you're facing. The shoes are tough enough to make the trip, tough though it may be. And here's why. Have thy day. Oh, come on. This is for me. But I don't want to just preach a message. Got to live where you are. As thy day, so shall who? Thy strength be. You know, I'm really scared to death today. I'm almost scared out of my wits. Because I got up feeling too good. You know why? As thy day, so shall thy strength be. Jesus once said, be not anxious, consider the lilies, they don't toil and strive, but our Father in heaven clothes them with a beauty. A sparrow doesn't fall without him seeing it. The numbers of your hair are numbered. That's how individual God's attention is. Hey, I'm not preaching an apologetic message today. I'm telling you, faith hangs the body on what God has said, and God says for every one of you, and for me today, thank His name, as thy day. That individualizes it. Not some generic day that we climb up to match. As thy, whatever problem is brewing back in your mind, even if you listen to me now, thy day is measured. His care is such. I'm so glad I'm having to preach to myself, because I count the number of times I've been on this passage and say to you, as thy day, so shall thy strength be. Thanks be to God, I know, as my day too. Measured out every day. Jesus said, no man exceeded Elijah. The greatest honor he could bestow upon John the Baptist, he came in the spirit of Elijah, of the two men who comforted him on the Mount of Transfiguration. Elijah's there. He walked with giant strides across the Old Testament, through the second book of Kings, and all through the northern kingdom of Israel. So you read his life story, every step was measured out. He got no barrel of oil. He had oil by the day. He didn't know where he was going while he was at the spot where the brook dried up. Until it dried up, then came the message, as thy day. If God could treat him that way. You see, I'm frustrated. I want to know how this battle's going to turn out. I want to have history. I want to be able to read my history like women read magazines. Starting on the back page. Well, I can't claim that promise. Nobody ever has a nervous breakdown about today's problems. There's not a one of you that are fretting, sitting there as though you're going to come to a crashing end right now. It's tomorrow that worries us. And I want to take the bit and bridle of God's Word today and jerk old Gene back in place and claim the promise and remember it. As thy day, so shall thy strength be. He doesn't promise tomorrow strength. He promises today. It took me years to come to the knowledge. Live in the strength of the day. The reason I said I'm nervous about today, I feel too good. When you get up and you can't hardly swing your legs out of the bed, say, praise God. I feel so weak. There's not much going to go wrong today. When you feel like I feel today, I'm seeing demons around every corner because I feel too good. Bound to be a tough day. Humor aside, He knows where you are. He knows the anxious problems. I preached a few weeks ago, commit your way to the Lord. He goes to work instantly with knowledge to order your steps. He's working. He knows what lies ahead. And if you can somehow grab your selfhood and detach it from that anxiety about tomorrow as thy day, He measures it out for each of you. As thy day, so shall thy strength be. We have an agreement, you know. When I resign here, if I do it at night, it don't count. The end of the day is what kills us, because the strength is measured. I can't tell you the number of times I've quit just before I went to sleep. Don't do it. Hang on to that promise as thy day, and He'll measure it for you. That's what I'm trying to tell the whole world. Get these legalistic morons out of your hair that tell you you have to qualify for God's care. He made you. He made you for a purpose. He chose you. There'll never be another you. He loves you, and He will take care of you, measuring out your strength by the day. And the fundamentalists who say different be damned. You really? I'm running out of time. You really don't have to go through their screening committee. You often be screened for Jimmy Swaggart, wouldn't it? He has the upside down view. Blinded by Grand Canyon. Thy shoes shall be iron and brass. Tough trip, tough enough shoes. He'll give you the strength. When the Lord calls, He enables. God enters into all things to work His good. Some of you fear for people you love. My mother's never out of my consciousness, no matter where I go. She's always there and worrying. She's taken care of. Somebody's there 24 hours a day. But I know her pain as she loses her eyesight, because she could be happy as long as she was reading the Bible. And her hearing's going. But I do know the Lord measures out strength to her. And I know that my role as her son, He'll strengthen and enable me, and He'll strengthen and enable her. It's what faith's about. You just look at the circumstances that frighten you, and then you say, I'm going to stick my fist up through that fog of circumstance, and here's a promise that fits my need, and I'm pulling it down. The shoes are tough enough, which means I'm going to make it through. This trip's not going to crush me. I'm going out swinging. And as my day, one day at a time, I may feel empty at the end of the day, but He'll fill it up again tomorrow. Now, what's the third one? The eternal God is thy refuge. Now, this is hard. I've tried for 20 years and failed. I'm going to see if I can do it again. The eternal God is existential reality, is thy refuge. You may wonder what I'm going to do with this Greek word. I'm coming back to it. I've lost it, but I'll write it again. The eternal God is thy refuge. Now, this is rough. Hard to get across. It's a pictorial word capable of all kinds of imaginary gyrations. One translation is the God of the forefront is thy refuge. But let me try what I never seem to get across. We live in time. But for God, there is no time. Einstein proved it's relative. That's to stretch the brain. If I had to stretch my brain to figure out that physics was telling me the truth, that all this solid matter is not very solid, mostly space and molecules sailing around in movement. It's hard to grasp that time is relative to us. With God, whomever, whatever He is, He was there, He is, and will be. Time's nothing. He occupies it all. Now let me try to explain how this God of the forefront concept can be my refuge in my anxious times. Now I got some anxious times. I've told you, I yo-yo up and down. I think we can have a sane resolution of the problem that's facing us, and then I see we can't. And I get anxious about the future of this ministry, myself, my leadership in this church. But this verse says, and I'm anxious because I don't know what's coming tomorrow. Okay, as my day, so shall my strength be. But can't you let me in on a little bit about tomorrow? The God of... Hold on, because I want flesh and blood here. Any of you worry? Don't hold your hand up. Just bring your mind with me. Any of you in a panic, anxious, worrying about tomorrow or some event that's threatening you around the corner? Go to God's perspective. With God, time's like watching a parade. Grab your brain. Don't leave me with that fast brain ahead of my slow speech. When a parade goes by, well, let's say something else first. My future is in front of me, and it's worrying me. Got it? And my past is behind me. I still remember a preacher who preached in Africa in one of the French nations who was going to show off he had just learned French. And he was going to preach a biographical message. And he got up, and there's about 5,000 Africans sitting there on the ground listening. He said, my message today, he meant to say, is about my past. But he said it's about mon derrière. Well, 5,000 Africans just started rolling on the ground. Then he went on and said, furthermore, mon derrière, I'll be due two parts. Well, he never got 5,000 Africans back with him. Because he was saying to you that don't know French, my message is about my behind. And furthermore, my behind has two parts, which is rather unusual. Our past is behind us. Our future is in front of us. But if you put time like a parade, what's up front has already passed. And what's behind is yet to come. I've tried this for 20 years because we're so bound with time. Help me by showing me some expression. Don't sit there like gimlet-eyed lobster and say, ah, so. For us, what's up front is yet to come. For us, what's behind is done gone by. But when you look at a parade, up what's up front has done gone by. And what's behind is yet to come. My future scares me because I don't know what's up front. But from God's perspective, what's up front has already done gone by Him, which is why they call Him the God of, that's the meaning of this word, the God of the forefront. He's up there on that corner, already passed it, turned Orange Grove in Colorado, and already proved that the float can make it before we get there. I'm down here peddling this stupid little mountain of flowers. So what scares me, He's already walked on. What scares me, He's already penetrated, which is a raw usage of the root word. What frightens me, He's already covered the territory. So the God of the forefront that I've trusted, who's given me the shoes, which is a symbolic promise that He's going to fit me adequately to make this trip. The God who measures out, think of it, measured out for every one of you and as far away as the refugee camps in Libya and those who saved their power to listen to this service in the heart of the Turkish peninsula, those poor, beaten down Armenian people suffering and still not allowed to get those supplies because Turks will not allow them to fly over their airspace, sitting there listening right now. God measured out. That's how much He cares. He measured out their strength. You got up, some of you today, and didn't think of Him. He thought of you and me. Measured out the strength. Because the God of the forefront knows what we're going to meet. And whom the Lord calls, He enables, and He gives us the strength to meet it. He's there, standing at the point when I reach there. He scouted every way. You know what Peter said. There is no temptation that befalleth man, but what we are enabled to bear it. Because, and the Greek has it, I know what the King James says, He's provided a way of escape. The Greek has it, for every temptation that hits you, whether you fall or not. And I define temptation different than most traditionalists. Because the only temptation that really counts and destroys you in relation to God is that temptation that pulls you loose from the grip to where you lose your trust and your grip on God's promise. And there's no temptation that hits you or me. I may fall for one of them. 10 of them may not grab me. But all 11, the one I fell for and the 10 I didn't, He already had a key in a door providing escape. For each of you, He not only measures strength out, I don't think I'm right. I know I'm right on this. The lost message of the church, which is God's love and grace, unmerited favor. For each one of you, overpowered with a problem, He measured your strength out. For every temptation, He's provided a way of escape already before it hits you. And He's on the corner, ready to help you there when you get there. Tomorrow's problem, He's already got the key in the door. God, help me to... One of these days I will preach a 7-day message. How long does it last for you? I go out of here saying I'm going to make it. Preaching myself, I've gotten my perspective. But it only lasts 6 days. Or 5 days. God, help me to get a 7-day grip on things until at 3 a.m. on Sunday morning I don't have to rediscover. I'm going to make it. The shoes are tough enough. God provided them. I'm going to have enough strength to make it through today and tomorrow. He's already on the corner and he'll measure it out there. Why do I forget that? Because I'm crazy like you. Got ink all over myself. Underneath. I just said, why can't it last? Why do I need to remind myself? Underneath are the everlasting arms. The word is only used once, translated underneath in the whole Bible. You've got to again stretch your brain. Can you visualize bottomless? I talked to somebody recently who needs to visualize everything. Can you visualize bottomless? How far down is bottomless? One of the translations is vanishing point. Underneath the vanishing point are everlasting arms. This message is very simple. And I end it here. It's going to be a tough trip. If you do things right, if you have any character, if there's something of the breath of eternity on you, which is a gift from God that makes you not satisfied with just eating and sleeping and a few other things and going through life, something pulls you that lifts you out of the mundane, which I call that hound of heaven that has activated the call that God put in those that He's chosen before the world's formed. To those that are going to go God's way, it's going to be tough, but you're going to make it. Don't quit. The shoes are tough enough. We will make it. As thy day, so shall thy strength be. Don't quit at night. Every day He'll measure it out. And let the individuality and the self-respect come from the knowledge that God is treating you one-on-one and will measure your strength out. Don't let the future scare you. Whatever problem terrifies, it's going to lead you in a way that He'll solve it for you. Don't give up on that. It can come in ways that look accidental to you. But the God of the forefront knows what the meandering is, and He chose you. He's given you strength. He's promised you'll have enough strength to make it. The shoes are tough enough. He will have the answer when you get to that corner. You say, I'm just whistling in the dark. Well, how many times have you watched me, this ministry, and this church get counted out? We've been burying enemies for 20 years. All of whom counted us out. There was a time I preached this with less assurance. There was no time I needed it quite as much. I know the truth. He will provide a way when you get there. But let's assume we stumble. That's why I got on the 6-day message. We give up. We forget. We don't keep this marvelous high road of faith. Underneath are everlasting arms. Now just walk with me mentally again. If there is a God, I obviously believe one, and you're awful foolish if you're here not believing it. But if there is a God, and the drop in failure is all the way to the vanishing point, obviously He ought to be fast enough. I could get a tennis racket under you if the drop is going to bottomless. This figure out of the Hebrew is trying to say what the measure of God's grace is. While the rest of the world will stomp on you when you fail, this verse says, however far bottomless is and however far the vanishing point is, if you fall, He's got time. I would say, I'm going to take His hands off other things. He's got things to do. And somebody says, hey, God, old Scott's fallen again. Whew! God! God can get there. The point of His grace, and I'll tell you whether anybody else knows it or not, because I know the free fall of failure too many times to assure me of God's grace and bleep the rest of the critical church world to assure me of His grace. Though the fall be so far down it hits bottomless, whatever that is, He never takes His arms away. He doesn't count on having the time to get there. He assures my faith in His grace, in His care. Mothers, fathers, children, failing saints, falling preachers, His arms stay there. So, again I said, damn the fundamentalists that would just sort of kick us a little further down. God's everlasting arms stay underneath, bottomless, to catch me, to catch you when we fall. I don't care what face you're wearing, if you've got any sensitivity and any ideals. That's why Paul doesn't waste time with some of the ridiculous definitions of sin. Sin in the New Testament is very simple. Hamartia in the Greek. You fall short. My best is never enough. And my failings consume me when it happens. But I've come to know, as the years have seasoned the knowledge of God's grace, no one else will catch you. And nobody else gives a damn. Underneath. Now, I don't say these words very often, but hallelujah. Underneath. Everlasting arms. He doesn't move them. He's going to catch you. So nobody wants to fall, but when you do, and if you're here today with a sense of failure, don't give up on His grace. His arms are there to catch you. The trip is tough. As thy day is, so shall thy strength be. The eternal God at the forefront is there before you get there. And when you fall, His arms are there to catch you. Exegesato, this word of God is said by John to be the exegesato of God. No man has seen Him, but God has spoken to us from His word, and He uses this word exegesato, which means to lead from behind a curtain and put on display to be seen. That which was not seen or understood is brought out from behind the curtain. So I don't get into complicated theological discussions and guilt inspiring sin hunts. This book and the messenger who brings it to you should lead God out from behind the curtain and put Him on display. And I'm telling you today that these verses lead to God. As He revealed Himself out from behind the curtain, He guides your path. He guarantees shoes tough enough to do it. He measures your strength. He gets to the corner of your path before you get there, and He has a way of escape already provided. And if you stumble en route, lose your faith, He's got His arms there no matter how far down you fall. So let Him pick you up and keep on going. And I want all my enemies to know, down I may be, but I ain't quitting, and we're going to make it through. And that's my message today.